Spider-Man, Spider-Man does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man.
Everyone, welcome back to the world's most mutated podcast. That's right, it's Uncanny Treks covers Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. Tonight we are talking episodes 3 through episode 5. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. Matt, how are you doing this evening?
Doing pretty well, Bob. These three episodes, I gotta say that they weren't bad episodes. They weren't great episodes, though. They didn't bring me in as much as the first two did. It is a little bit of a world expansion here. They've changed some things up. We'll talk as we get further into details. But other three episodes, Bob, the first one is a Secret Identity Crisis.
I enjoyed them more than you did. It's nice to get a sense of where the show is going and what it's likely to be. So I appreciated that.
But does it feel like one big What If episode, Bob?
No, because I stopped watching What If after season one and have tried to not think about it and scrub it entirely from my mind.
Does it feel like some sort of weird Ultimate Spider-Man?
It does feel like some sort of Ultimate Spider-Man. And I still do a little bit have the opinion that if they were going to make his two major nemeses black, the Osborns and Lonnie Lincoln, they should have just got ahead and made Peter Parker black. But I wasn't feeling that as strongly last week, and I'm feeling that a little more strongly this week. But it feels like Ultimate Spider-Man, but I just appreciate that it's a Spider-Man cartoon, but it doesn't presuppose you knowing anything else.
And what do you know, Bob, about Sony's Spider-Man video game? Do you know anything about it?
A few things, although I heard more people talk about the first game than the later games.
Yes.
Or later game. At least the first game, I think Peter's been Spider-Man for about 5 years. Some villains have appeared, some haven't. He works in Dr. Ock's lab.
Yes,
or something.
He does. Right.
It sounded like a lot of the plots were taken from the Dan Slott run, although I've only read the Superior Spider-Man part of Dan Slott. I haven't read Big Time or Ends of the Earth. And I know that they introduced Miles, I think, in a minor way in the first game, and then he's basically co-lead in the second game.
That's
that right?
That's correct. I was just curious how you're, because see, balancing all of these different Spider-Man worlds and comparing them, it's not easy. And then you also have the end of the Spider-Verse stuff, which is its own thing. It's getting a little crazy, Bob. It's a bit of a crisis.
And that's why episode 3, entitled Secret Identity Crisis. And Matt, I just wanted to begin by observing that it's pretty funny that they named this episode after a terrible Spider-Man crossover. Actually, I don't know if it's a terrible Spider-Man crossover. I've never read it. But mostly, I think the consensus is that it's a terrible Spider-Man crossover. But there's an even more terrible DC crossover called Identity Crisis. Although, to make it even more complicated, and we'll get into why this is later, it's really more the fourth episode, which is named after a different Spider-Man story, that actually does the stuff from the Spider-Man Identity Crisis crossover.
Oh, wow. Just real quick, Bob, is there a Spider-Man crossover that is good? Because I can't really think of any off the top of my head.
I got some strong childhood nostalgia for Maximum Carnage. I can't say that it's good.
Yeah, I had that really thick volume of that book, and I had trouble getting through it even as a kid, and it was just rough. I think I even picked it up again as an adult.
I've read it as an adult. It's not good, but it's fun, in the same way that, like, Nightfall is not good, but fun.
That may be my next adventure. I need to make it through Maximum Carnage without cringing.
I've told you, right, I paused my big Spider-Man read-through.
Yes.
But in 2024, I made it from Amazing Fantasy 15 to the early 90s in reading Spider-Man. And when I read the original Clone Saga in the early 70s, the Jerry Conway Clone Saga, I have to say, after reading that, the 90s Clone Saga made a lot more sense because, yeah, they had to bring this back. The way Jerry Conway, and I think it's actually Len Wein, Jerry Conway gets fired and Len Wein, I think, takes over and writes the last issue of Clone Saga, the original Clone Saga. But yeah, you totally have to do the 90s Clone Saga in the way they did. So I'm not saying that the 90s Clone Saga is good, but I am saying that I have a lot of nostalgia for it and that it makes total sense why they did what they did based on the 70s Clone Saga. And so when I eventually read the 90s Clone Saga, I'm going to be very interested if I actually think it's bad or if I decide to be a revisionist on it and say, no, it's good, actually.
Yeah, that sounded like one of the perfect sound bites for a podcast to draw listeners in for your weird opinions. Yeah, I didn't read the original Clone Saga, so you're right. I probably should go back, but then I have to go back and read that and then read the shitty Clone Saga that I already...
You should read the original Clone Saga. And what I would really say, Matt, and I would say this to almost anyone, it's at least the first 200 issues of Amazing Spider-Man are pretty solidly great the whole way through. But yeah, there's a dud here or there, an issue dud here or there, but really it's great for 200 issues. And so anybody who at all enjoys Spider-Man at some point should make the pilgrimage and should read those first 200 issues would be my advice. And in so doing, you will read the original Clone Saga. And I think everybody agrees that the original Clone Saga is good. I don't think it has a lot of haters.
Clone Saga 90s, Bob, sucked.
Well, one other question I wanted to pose to you, Matt. Can you think of many other Spider-Man crossovers to have an opinion on? Because I haven't read very much 21st Century Spider-Man at all. Very little. That's something I want to do eventually, but it's just not something I've read a bunch of.
I mean, do we?
And so I don't have any opinion on 21st Century Spider-Man crossovers. And the only other crossover that immediately comes to mind from the 90s is Planet of the Symbiotes, which I'm sure is not amazing, but I don't know.
I can't really think of any. But they had so many books at one point. It just seems like there would have been more crossovers.
They did have four or five at the same time, but I think they were never tied as tightly together as the Superman ones were.
Not at all. And that always confused me as a kid because I expected them to be, and they weren't. And then I kept looking for some indicator on the covers to like the Superman comics had with the triangle shield.
That's an interesting thing. In the past few years, I've reread a lot of late 80s, early 90s Superman, and I've reread a lot of late 80s, early 90s Spider-Man. And one of the things that we were just dumb kids, or at least I was a dumb kid, and I never paid attention to the creators, and I had no idea who was writing or drawing and had no opinions about the writers and the artists.
That sounds like me like 3 years ago, Bob.
But as I read it now, I see in both Spider-Man and Superman books, even though a lot of times, especially in the Superman books, the storytelling is very embedded, where you have to pretty much be reading all the books. Still, like, all the books have very different tones, pretty different art styles, pretty identifiable creative teams and things they're doing and accomplishing. And so that was just something that always just floated right by me as a kid.
And it's for me, too, because they each had their own take on Spider-Man, the way he acted.
Speaking of other Spider-Men, did you catch that Nico Minora's foster mother is named O'Hara? Miguel O'Hara is Spider-Man 2099, and potentially Miss O'Hara might be Miguel O'Hara's mother or grandmother or foster mother.
Yeah, it would have to be way down the line, though, right? Like several years, because Miguel would have been born in 2060, 2070.
I've never really read Spider-Man 2099. I only read a couple issues when we were kids, but my impression is that people have tended to, not least the Spider-Verse movies,
yes,
have tended to use Miguel in different ways. So yeah, I could well imagine that this show isn't literally going to tie Miguel O'Hara to 2099. But on the other hand, yeah, you might be right if we're going to, and also it might just be a coincidence too.
It's just a little Easter egg.
We do get an interesting kind of revelation or rationale for a thing, which is, it was funny that we had Amadeus Cho, Asha from Wakanda, Jean Foucault, and Peter as the four Osborn interns. And in this episode 3, we find from Norman that these were his top four suspects for who might be the Q for Spider-Man or who might be the tech support for Spider-Man.
I got a theory already, Bob, and go already in this show.
Hit us with your
theory. Got Amadeus, you've got all these people that are somewhat like recognizable with a leader who is the wizard or whatever, and then you've got a whole thing full of different suits that no one's using, specifically three suits. Come on. Norman's going to create his own Avengers with these people.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't think Asha and Jean Foucault have much character established, so maybe. But I don't know if that's the way the show would want to do Amadeus Cho. I don't know much about Amadeus as a character.
Yeah.
But he is a fairly well-established character in his own way. I don't know. The show is upending some things about Lonnie Lincoln and the Osborns, so maybe it would upend that about Amadeus.
I mean, see Scorpion in a later episode, and it's just a dude with a knife and a scorpion tattoo?
Oh, yeah, we'll get to that.
It's like, okay, come on. It's not that far-fetched. It could happen. when I'm looking at this, I'm like, what are they setting up here?
Well, let's come back to that, because that's the next episode.
Alrighty.
Another thing I just wanted to say, I'm really glad Norman thinks an AI drone would be too much. He's not going to do an AI drone for the Spider-Man costume.
Well, that was in the movies. You did not watch the second one, correct?
No, I only watched the first Tom Holland Spider-Man.
The second one is when he gets the drone, and that's when it's...
Oh, he actually has a drone when he's fighting Mysterio?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he does. It comes off his outfit, and it's like the tentacles and everything, but it's like also a flying thing. It's ridiculous.
Is that vaguely inspired by Superior Spider-Man?
Oh, yes. 100 times. Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Interesting. Interesting. And then the other question I wanted to pose to you about episode 3, Matt, was, do Speed Demon and Tarantula kind of give you Cyclops and Jean Grey vibes? I mean, you know, Tarantula's got the red hair. Speed Demon's got the red glasses.
You're right. And I, for some reason in my brain, I didn't put Speed Demon and Tarantula as the characters.
I couldn't place them either.
Oh, you didn't either? Oh, because you're absolutely right. That's what they are. I just didn't think it through.
The Scott and Jean is my own observation, but yeah. I didn't know. I had to look up who they were to see. I know both of those characters, but I don't know them well. And Tarantula might be a gender swap, or she might not. I'm actually not sure.
I think it is.
There at least is a male Tarantula, but there might also be a female Tarantula already in the comics.
You're right. They do give off Jean and Scott vibes, or Bonnie and Clyde type things. But we get the Bonnie and Clyde stuff later on, too. We just keep...
My last question for you about episode 3, Matt, and we'll keep going. When Peter's going through Ben's camera and he's cycling through all those pictures, were you really expecting there to be a scantily clad picture of Ben and May on that camera?
I really was, Bob. And that's what freaked me out. I think every single person our age... was watching that.
I guess this is a Generation Alpha Peter Parker. Would he be a Generation Alpha, or would he be a young Zoomer? I'm not sure, but he's just too innocent.
Yeah, he's too innocent. He's just flipping around, and even the last shot was of May, and I was like, oh, wait a minute. Okay, she's good. She's good. It's just a...
Yeah, yeah. What generation do you think the Spider-Man would be? He might be right on the borderline, because Gen Alpha starts in 2010, according to this. Yeah, that would make him... That's about right. So... I guess he's right on the edge of Zoomer and Alpha.
But Bob, if this is an alternate universe or adjacent universe to the MCU, you got to keep those dates in mind as well. When did Civil War happen?
Well, it's true, but we also might be on a sliding time scale where Civil War might have taken place in the prime MCU at one place, but this alternate universe might be on a sliding time scale.
Quit slapping me with logic.
Matt, who is your favorite character in Secret Identity Crisis?
I'm going to give it to Norman Osborn, because I didn't give it to him. I don't think I gave it to him the last episode.
It's a really good performance. And then to move on to episode 4, that's called Hitting the Big Time. It's named after a Dan Slott run called Big Time. But like I said, it parallels the Spider-Man crossover Identity Crisis. And we'll get to that in just a sec. I did just want to check with you. So the MCU references we get in this movie are Avengers 1 and 2. Incredible Hulk and Captain America 3. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. The Winter Soldier. I think they did mention some things.
Just to confirm, I think we're already on this page, but just to make sure. So basically, this is just another timeline like you would see in the What If TV show. And so it's the MCU is the base timeline, that the Spider-Man stuff is just different in this universe. Is that your interpretation?
That's what the direction they're going to go with a lot of things from now on. But the way Deadpool panned out, I went back and listened to our coverage of Deadpool 3, and even I was confusing myself about how the timeline works, just listening to myself talk about it.
Is that Hugh Jackman Wolverine in that? He's similar to the Hugh Jackman Wolverine we've had in prior movies, but he's not the same one?
That is my understanding.
On one hand, Matt, that sucks.
Yeah.
On the other hand, when compared to our recent complaint about Creature Commandos, which listeners might have noticed we hated so much that we just couldn't bear to record any on it after the first two episodes.
Or I didn't watch the last episode, I'll be honest.
Good man. Don't. It's pointless. But one of the things that sucked about Creature Commandos, or at least one of my theories about why it sucks, is that because James Gunn is doing this deep, deep interconnected DCU, he can't really give himself much room to tell stories. And so all that Creature Commandos was one plot stretched out to 7 episodes with a lot of flashbacks, a lot of origin filling in. And I think that's a product of him writing for this overarching shared universe, and he just didn't give himself the space that he needed.
To me, Bob, Gunn just had those spaced out origin stories with little bitty cameos and hints to DC crap that maybe we might see one day down the line, or that one shot of Batman. I mean, come on.
Oh,
who cares? I've seen Batman. We've seen these characters so many times. It is exciting that we're going to have a new Superman or whatever, and we're going to see some of these films. I'm hyped just because of that, because I never really cared for the most recent one. Henry Cavill, yeah, I just didn't care for his Superman compared to the Christopher Reeve version.
I have no idea what any of you people are talking about when you complain about different suits. Henry Cavill, Christopher Reeves, the new guy, who cares?
It's a slight bit of charm, I think is what it is, Bob. There's just a little more charm to the character, a little more of this guy was raised in like the country. You could just feel it. You never felt it with Cavill.
I don't remember Justice League or Batman v Superman well enough to even even begin to have an opinion. I've seen people flipping out over the new guy over 2 minutes in a trailer.
Oh, no, it's no. Just like, that's just people being stupid. Anybody ever, but there's always that for no matter what happens.
I love Superman, the comics character, but I don't know. To me, the film Superman is just as generic as they come, always as generic as they come. I don't know what these differences people think they see are.
You just didn't watch it as a child, and that's why. And that's all it is. Because
okay,
I watched Batman 89 and Superman 78 so many times as a kid. Well, specifically Superman 4, The Quest for Peace. So many times as a kid that it just ingrained in my brain. I'm never going to agree with anything you say that be mean about it.
They're really bad movies. I don't know what...
You have your opinion, Bob. We can agree to disagree.
Superman
1978, 4.5 stars, Bob. Every time.
Oh my God.
Batman 89, five stars, six stars.
Do you remember when Lois Lane really writes a really bad poem? It's so bad.
I've got part of it memorized. Can you read my mind? Do you know what it is I'm thinking?
I refuse to go down this road anymore. But to close off two things, it allows them freedom to do stuff. As we saw from James Gunn's Creature Commandos, not having the freedom to do stuff is death. That's point one. I also just remembered I didn't say my character of the episode for episode 3. So my character of the episode was going to be Big Donovan's beard. I really like his beard. But Tarantula, a.k.a. Latina Jean Grey, was wrecking cops, and that was cool. So I'll give it to Tarantula.
Nice, Bob. Nice.
Matt, so do you recognize any of the three trial costumes that Norman has Peter wear in episode 4, Hitting the Big Time?
I recognize Hornet.
That probably is the most memorable slash most notable one.
But am I just confusing it with a different character? That's the problem I have, because I feel like I'm confusing it with Beetle.
Oh, the Beetle, the villain.
Yes.
Yeah, so. Abner Jenkins. We were talking about the Identity Crisis crossover, which I've never read, but people say is bad. And for whatever reason, Norman Osborn does something, and so Spider-Man has to take up 4 alternate identities in that crossover. And I think 2 are villains and 2 are heroes. The 4 identities are Ricochet, Prodigy, Hornet, and Dusk. Ricochet doesn't show up in this episode, as far as I'm aware, but the 3 costumes he has, the dark one is Dusk, the Hornet one is obvious, and then the night one is Prodigy. I don't know if do you remember a comic that came out in the late 90s called Slingers?
No, what's Slingers, Bob?
So in the crossover, these 4 identities are just Spider-Man in disguises, right?
Right.
But after that, somehow some teens get a hold of these costumes and they become Prodigy, Ricochet, Hornet, and Dusk. And then there's a teen book that runs for maybe 20 issues about them called Slingers.
So what you're telling me, Bob, is that these 3 costumes, Prodigy, Hornet, and Dusk, could be given to 3 teenagers who would then act as like a superhero team known as the Slingers.
Yes. Although would they actually call them the Slingers? I don't know.
If only there were a group of teenagers readily available to Norman Osborn to make them the Slingers.
When you put it like that, it does sound probable.
Previously, a couple of minutes ago, you would have shot down my damn idea.
I specifically shot it down as it relates to Amadeus Cho. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think the theme of the crossover was how cool these new ideas are. You're supposed to get excited about these new identities, get excited about these new costumes, collect the trading cards and the action figures, right?
Yes.
Whereas the theme of this episode is about how much all 3 of these suck. And so that doesn't seem like they're setting up
In the wrong hands, Bob.
But Peter Parker's the hero of the show. His hands are wrong.
His destiny is to be the Spider-Man, Bob. He has spider powers. One seems really smart. That's a Prodigy. Bob, let's talk about this character I mentioned a little earlier. We get to see Scorpion.
2 different Scorpions, actually. So we get to see the classic 60s Scorpion, Matt Gargan, who is very different than he is in the comics. In the comics, he's a supervillain in a Scorpion outfit. Here, he's a gang leader. Interestingly, he still has the same background as the supervillain because they're both ex-private investigators, which is interesting.
It is really interesting, but what did you think about the design of this? Just the look of the character and the knife that he was carrying. That's the scorpion. It felt like they were just trying to make him real gritty. I'm so used to seeing the one from the animated series where he looks like he's in a rubber suit. But were you a little worried, though, that maybe the knife was poisoned and that that was going to lead to some problems?
No, I had no thoughts about that at all, to be honest. Dang, maybe Bob, I should have been. You're a better viewer than I am. We're going to get the slingers, yeah. And you're right, and I'm wrong. So the other scorpion is Carmela Black, not a character I'm familiar with, but in the comics, she's apparently a superheroine named Scorpion. And then a little bit of trivia. Do you remember Aranya from Madame Web?
The movie or the comic?
The movie. As far as I'm aware, there's never been a comic, which is weird.
That's weird. They made a film about it.
You remember how Madame Web had three Spider Girls? In the comics, the Latina one, who's a math genius in the movie. I don't think she's a math genius in the comics, but in the comics, she's a Spider Girl, but her name is Aranya.
I really didn't pay attention to that film. It was that bad.
It really is that bad.
And I still can't believe you watched Kraven. I haven't seen it yet, but it was
fun.
Yeah, Bob says it was
fun. I mean, it's
fun.
Terrible, yeah, but it was fun. It was not nearly as objectionable as Madame Web.
Yeah, well, we covered all those if you haven't listened, guys, so go back and check it out.
We have episodes on Madame Web and Venom 3 and Kraven and Morbius for your listening pleasure. Now, the other little bit of trivia I wanted to hit you with, Matt. So, Aranya, who's not been in the show so far, Amadeus Cho, who has been, and then the female Scorpion, Carmela Black, they all debuted in Amazing Fantasy Volume 2, which was a series that they did in the aughts. And so it's funny that so many characters are coming from that.
That is strange. I mentioned the video game earlier. Some of the characters come from the video game as well. I believe Amadeus Cho was in the video game. I don't remember how, though.
Oh, that's interesting. I could be wrong because, like I said, I haven't read much 21st Century Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But I don't think Amadeus Cho has much interactions with Spider-Man in the comic.
That's weird.
Matt, when we got the Future Foundation costume, did you pop for that?
I did, and I knew it was the Future Foundation costume because we read that. No, I know that costume, and I was like, where'd they get that from? Where's the Fantastic Four?
It is funny that it's a Norman Osborn instead of Reed Richards creation in this show.
Right.
And then the thing I popped even harder, though, Matt, when the four Russian criminals, when they mentioned the tracksuit Draculas from Matt Fraction and David Aja's Hawkeye,
yeah.
I stood up and pumped my fist. I love the tracksuit Draculas. They're the best villains.
So weren't there tracksuit mafia dudes in the actual Hawkeye live action show you did?
We don't
watch?
Talk about that. That show sucks. Okay. We pretend it doesn't exist. And we don't tarnish one of the great comics of the 21st century with that really subpar adaptation.
Okay, I was just checking. We've got other characters here, Bob, that I'm more familiar with from the animated series.
Do you want to run down who our four Russian criminals are or who they're likely to be, Matt?
Yeah, so we've got Dmitry, who is the Chameleon. We have Mikhail, who is Rhino's dad in the comics.
Presumably, he's just going to be Rhino.
Right, and,
the
that,
show,
and,
I guess.
And that's
yeah.
totally what I got from him. Mila is a gender-swapped unicorn, which I don't know much about.
Not a character I really remembered, although she's the only one who's actually become her character by this point.
Right, and then Roxana might be Songbird. I'm somewhat familiar with Songbird.
Yeah, I didn't make that connection. That was somebody else's connection they made based off the hair.
Oh, yeah. It totally has the look. This group is interesting. I they were so much more colorful in the animated series, man.
Matt misses his 90s animated
series. Yeah, I want everybody to have a really, really cool costume, not just be scary looking.
Do you like this version of Doc Ock?
He's got the old school look to me, at least. It's a weapons dealer or something.
Then who was your character of the episode for episode 4, hitting the big time?
I'm just going to give it to Scorpion Bob because I just didn't expect him.
But which Scorpion, Matt?
Oh, the dude.
All right. That's a little sexist, Matt, but we'll go with it. Matt, I'm going to give it to Peter Parker, which normally I try to resist giving it to the protagonist of the show. But him walking in on Harry and Norman with his mask off to just expose his secret identity to Harry, that's why I like these episodes maybe more than you. That's such perfect Spider-Man crap. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe a video game or Ultimate Spider-Man or a comic I'm not remembering does have Peter do that. But it's just the perfect way for Peter to blow his secret identity. And I can't believe I can't think of him never doing that before in a film or a comic or a cartoon.
At this point, though, this is the end of episode 4, and already Norman and Harry both know that he is Spider-Man.
Like you said last week, we know these stories pretty well. And so
right.
Telling these stories from a different angle, from a different direction, all to the good, right?
Episode 5, Unicorn Unleashed.
All right, Matt. So Doc Ock's assistant is named Vincent. Did you have any idea who that was?
Not a clue.
I didn't either, but apparently it's this, the minor supervillain Leapfrog.
Leapfrog? Man, they're going like deep
cuts.
Which show goes more deep cut, Bob? This or the Superman show we've been covering?
Definitely this, especially in terms of volume. The Superman show does occasionally go deep, but it's not going deep every episode.
That's true. So far, we've seen some major deep stuff. And there's some video game stuff that I'm not going to go into detail, but you could see some of the structures of the stories are similar. So I know they're pulling from some of those ideas. What Norman Osborn said, and Doc Ock both tell Peter, is that your secret is safe with me. And then eventually turn on him the exact same way you would see it.
Is Doc Ock's lab assistant an important character in the game?
No.
Okay, I thought I vaguely remembered having heard something about in the first game, Ock having an assistant, but I might just be making that up. Another thing I liked in Episode 5, Unicorn Unleashed, Matt, is that we have Neeko defending superhero registration, which, to be honest, I don't want to sound like a government stooge, but if superheroes were real, I would want them registered with the federal government.
I would too, Bob, but do you think that Doge would tear that department up pretty quick?
Tears lots of good things up. It doesn't mean we shouldn't have them. Although, I would say USAID, not necessarily a good thing. They fund some good programs, but they fund some really bad programs too. So I can't really say that I'm sorry to see USAID go. They have been repeatedly used to destabilize left-wing governments in Central and South America. So to hell with USAID.
But how about the Department of Education, Bob?
I'm really curious to look what to see what abolishing the DOE means for both my student loans and for my future employment prospects.
Well, right now, Bob, my boss is Linda McMahon, my big boss.
Oh yeah, the very top. Mine too, dog.
Yeah, it's crazy, too. Isn't it, man?
Crazy. I teach in a public school too.
It's insane. Yeah, it's crazy, Bob. That's the world we live in.
Every morning when I get to work, Matt, I salute a picture of Linda McMahon.
I'm gonna try to put one up in my school. See if they'll let me. I'm gonna get one from like the 90s though. Attitude era.
Yeah. With the blue, when she's walking McFoley or the Big Show out to wrestle.
Yeah, she's wearing like a Hillary outfit, the whole blue thing.
I'm gonna get
one of those put up in the office up there. See how long it lasts.
Well, Matt, speaking of patriotic costumes, do you like the idea that the colors on Spider-Man's blue and red suit are inspired by Captain America?
I don't really care. And we all know red and blue just looks really good. That's why Superman's costume looks so good. That's why Captain America and Spider-Man, that's why their costumes look so great. Those two colors are always going to look good.
The other Captain America tidbit, and yeah, granted, I like this episode well enough, but there wasn't a lot to say. Spider-Man fights the unicorn, yay.
Yeah.
But we get another Captain America reference, which is that Harry is a Cap clone truther. He thinks that the current Captain America is a clone, which, honestly, in the Marvel Universe is a reasonable theory and should be respected.
That could be a fun Captain America 5 where you've got Mackie as your Captain America versus a lot of the other guys clone.
I'm never going to watch another Captain America movie, not because I have anything against Mackie as Cap, but just because I refuse to watch things that are dependent on me having seen a Disney miniseries. But if they wanted to keep doing cartoons in this timeline and they wanted to do a Cap cartoon, either with Steve Rogers or with Sam Wilson, I'd be down with that.
Wow. It'd be kind of cool. Have we ever had a Cap series, animated series?
No.
Never.
I think there was a little talk in the 90s, but I don't think it ever came to anything. I think the closest we ever got was a very late and pretty, honestly, very bad Spider-Man arc in, I think, season 5 in the 90s Spider-Man that prominently featured Cap. And then they did that in the last X-Men 92 season 2, right? We saw that. And then in the 90s Avengers show, he's not even in the regular cast of that show, but there's one Cap spotlight episode of that show.
I remember him vaguely in that in Spider-Man the animated series in the final season of that show. The Secret Wars.
Doug, it's actually not even the Secret Wars. It's something much dumber and worse. I hate Secret Wars too. Yeah. But yeah, if we ever get around to covering the 90s Spider-Man cartoon, my man, you have such horrors ahead of you in season 5 of that show. Who was your character of the episode for Unicorn Unleashed?
I'm going to give it to Harry because he changes his role a bit in this episode where you start to see him. He's not Oracle.
I was going to say Oracle.
He's more like Ned, though, in the films. His friend Ned.
Yeah.
And you haven't watched them.
I saw somebody else make that connection online, but yeah, it means nothing to me.
Right. That's more of what I'm seeing, but Oracle's another way of putting it. But I like that dynamic they have going. And I'm interested to see where they go with Norman, if they're going to go the Goblin route or if they're going to go something completely different. It's Harry going to go the Goblin route?
Well, I'm really enjoying the show, Matt. I'm enjoying it far more than I thought it would.
Who is your character of the episode, Bob?
Why do I keep forgetting to say my characters of the episode, Matt? I'm going to give it to Rhino, or the guy who will become Rhino, or who will become Rhino's dad, because he tells Spider-Man, "We're even now, Bug." I thought that was a funny line. All right, Matt. Well, it's been fun talking about this. We'll probably be back next week for, I think it's three more episodes.
Yeah.
I like this accelerated release schedule.
It's different, but I do like it as well.
No, it's a nice happy medium because one episode is too little to cover and a whole season is far too much. And so it's a nice happy medium, I think.
I agree.
All right. Well, I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Have a great night, everyone.
Thanks for listening.